the award-winning Crunch Time.
No mark. Ground ball. Ferrets. Top of the square. Essendon fight back. Hand pass to Martin. Long range bombs a beauty. Nick Martin strikes from outside the arc. And for all the peppering, they finally land one. Bombers win. A finish loaded with controversy.
You could say once the ball's underneath you, you've got to make an effort to try and get it out. He did the old put his arms out and said, I don't really want to take it. I'm not interested. But once it's under you, I think it's probably the onus is on you to try and get the ball out.
I haven't looked at a replay. Masses of numbers around the ball. There are a lot of decisions holding the ball for and against throughout the night. You know, we'll obviously focus on the one in the last couple of seconds, but I can show you a couple of others too if you like.
I'm not going to make a comment around umpiring. That'll just add to the night.
A hectic and contentious finish at Adelaide Oval left the locals furious and the football world engulfed in debate. But Essendon got the reward it deserved from a pressure-packed night as Brad Scott sets a promising platform. Waitman's the crummer, the roller for a third, bump, 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 home!
To the square, Norton sets himself, couldn't quite take it. Treloar's there, throws it off the boot and bounces it through. Adam Treloar with the goal.
He winds up around the man on the mark, gives it the lot from 53. That was sweet! Bailey Dale, welcome back! Out of the doghouse and into prime time. That has been a mightily impressive response from the Bulldogs. Restoring plenty of faith internally and externally as well.
Yeah, it was a good night for us. Obviously on the canvas a little bit during the week. We put pressure on ourselves because we expect a lot and we understand that externally there's an expectation of us. That's okay. If we front up like we have tonight, a couple of other occasions where we've had good outcomes, you know, we'll be in the mix, but it remains to be seen and we understand that.
The Bulldogs respond to a week of fierce scrutiny in the only way you can, with emphatic on-field victory, distinct for the return to form of a couple of much-discussed veterans.
The MRO graded it a one-match suspension. That's where we thought the right result would have been.
Should character assessments and overviews off the field relate to on-field incidents overall, do you think?
Oh, God, I actually think that's a really good question, and I think that would be one of the things that we would look at towards the end of the year.
It's incumbent on you to use that. It would be offensive to any of our players to suggest that they're of lesser character than the two players in recent history who have successfully used that clause, because there are plenty of others who have asked for it and been denied, which is highly offensive.
And if a bloke's got a good record, he's played 200 games and he's never been suspended for a match, you would at least give that a mention, I think. Otherwise, you'd be remiss in your duty to that player. So it was mentioned. Mate, interview the tribunal. Don't interview me. I didn't make the decision, okay?
You have some good weeks and you have some bad weeks. And so that continued probably symptoms and that was ultimately why they thought it was the best decision for me to retire at this point in time.
And one of the most confounding tribunal rulings in many a year has the system under fire, while another promising career is prematurely ended by concussion. All the big issues of the week and the games of Super Saturday lie before us on the Round 6 edition of Crunch Time. Lucky to make it out of South Australia. Tizer screams, lying shame. It's a brilliant headline with the photo of Draper lying on top of the footy at the end last night. Controversial last-second miss-free kick call costs Crows a shot at victory against Bombers. On the footbridge as we departed last night, it sounded a bit like this.
Absolutely, the Crows were robbed. Right in front of me. Right in front of me.
Oh, yeah, too.
Yes, it was irresistible. On the plane, I spent the whole flight searching the laws of the game for the frog splash, but I couldn't find it anywhere. I'm telling you, the AFL is getting more like the WWE every week. Jared Waitley with you for Crunch Time. David King is with me. Hello to you, Kingy.
Oh, g'day, G. I wish I was there last night. I really do. Anytime you get a chance to play that audio, I'm in. Bizarre finish. Pretty ordinary game, to be fair, but a great result for the Bombers. And, you know, they get things back on track. And I was pretty hard on them a couple of weeks ago, but defensively last night, I thought they were brilliant.
Luke Hodge, feel like we left a state in flames as we got out today.
Oh, and fair enough too. I think if you see the Adelaide supporters and the look in their face, just look at the reaction of the players as well, because Adelaide know that their season is pretty much done now. They had a little bit of hope. We brought in the reason. We brought in four umpires to pick up every little thing that can cause a win or a loss, and unfortunately the four umpires last night missed a massive one. But as far as Draper, he did what he was supposed to. Secondary stoppages, repeat stoppages, try and run the clock down. But when you play dead fish on the footy oval line on top of a ball, it was actually quite funny. And then to make it even worse, in front of the Adelaide supporters on the hill, he mocked again and did exactly what he did in front of a couple of teammates. So, look, it was entertainment, but look, Essendon were clearly the best team last night. They should have won by more, but at least we got a little bit to talk about after the last couple of seconds.
Sammy Edmund's been on a busy beat today. He's got the verdict. Hello to you, Sam.
Hello, Jared. I've got it in my hot little hands here. But just firstly, I mean, Hodgie just touched on it there. Criminal psychologists have made a career out of assessing why guilty people return to the scene of the crime. You never return to the scene of the crime. So for Sam Draper to reenactment, even those who were willing to give him the benefit of the doubt, I reckon it stripped all them away right then and there, Jared, after the game. But geez, swings and roundabouts. I'm not sure if they got a swing or a roundabout, but they got something last night, isn't it?
So before we get to the edict from the AFL, I think it's the morning to reprise an old World of Sport segment.
The Friendly Way presents What's Your Decision?
TAA, The Friendly Way.
I thought it was Ballantyne. I'd have lost my dough there, Jared.
All right, David King, what was your decision?
Well, firstly, I think it's possibly the dumbest thing I've seen a ruckman do in many a year.
Oh, they've done some dumb things, King.
Percy Jones, it's right up there with the Percy Jones kicking the goalpost instead of the footy sort of level. He's in rare air. Bizarre move. I mean, to do that, to risk that, it's the only way you can really risk the game at that stage, just to give away a free kick with, you know, 10 seconds to go. So, bizarre move. He got away with it. It's clearly a free kick. And I just think the umpire froze under the heat of the decision that's going to cost the game. Swing the game one way or the other, he didn't want to make that call.
Hodgie, what was your decision?
My decision is Tex Walker's lining up for his 620th career goal. He jumped on Draper. Draper laid on the ball, clear as day. In my opinion, it was a free kick. I've watched it time and time again just before, and it has not changed my mind. Umpires are in a perfect view, I reckon. Clearly, I just think the umpire panicked. It was 2 seconds to go. It was an intense game. Probably the situation got the better of him, but definitely holding the ball from my point of view.
I was broadcasting with Mark Bickley, the dual premiership captain. I don't feel like I gave Bix the full platform to say what he really thought, because I think this is what was on his mind.
Oh, this is murder. Absolute murder.
You've gone. So you're going to have to educate us where that's from.
That's the infamous Adelaide Fitzroy game.
Early 90s.
Yeah.
Football Park.
Where Fitzroy were robbed in the most graphic way. I think I regret not giving Bix full license to do that. Nice. You have the actual verdicts there.
Very interesting verdict. So an explanation from the AFL. So bear with me here as I read out this statement from an AFL spokesperson. This is how it goes. In the moment and at ground level, the umpires believe that Draper dived on the ball and then the ball came out to Draper's left and was then knocked back under him by Taylor Walker. In review and with the assistance of the broadcast angle and behind the goal's Hawkeye vision providing a clearer look, you can see that the ball moves from under Draper's chest to under his armpit shoulder, which means the ball is still in his possession and he has not immediately knocked it clear. Therefore, it technically should have been a holding the ball free kick. It's a very challenging one for the umpires in this situation with the ball on the ground to see exactly where the ball is under a large number of players. There were 17 Essendon players in the immediate area and who has control of it. On ground level, they were not certain of all these factors, so they didn't pay it, which is the correct approach at the time. So to summarise, technically it was a free kick, but given the context and what was in front of the umpire, they weren't absolutely sure, so therefore the AFL understands why they didn't pay the free kick.
No, that is incorrect. Just say we were incorrect, it should have been a free kick, and Tex should have been having a shot on goal. Every position, if that had been in the middle of the ground, and you see a ruckman dive to the ground, remember the old saying, if you go to ground, you have to get it out? Draper clearly went to ground. He had to get out. It was his responsibility to get the ball out because he opted to go to ground and lay on top of the ball. So the rest of that part, what you just said, Sammy, from their explanation, is crap.
Yeah, exactly what you're... Yes, crap.
That's pretty much it. That's what
just had to look up 18.6.5 in the laws of the game. The word crap's not mentioned, but it says free kicks it holding the ball, diving on top of the football, and it reads like this, Hodgie. A field umpire shall award a free kick against a player who dives on top of or drags the football underneath their body and fails to immediately knock clear or correctly dispose of the football when legally tackled. Now, if we are going to say that Taylor Walker's tackle was legal, which I think most of us are, some are not, then that was holding the ball.
So the Crows were robbed right in front of me.
Right in front of me. This is that's not the Keys' ghost goal, is it, to be honest? And Adelaide, we'll get to them in a moment, or it pains to stress that. But, gee, that in, they've been on the end of three contentious...
So this is a litany now of three incorrect calls validated by the AFL. The first being the Collingwood game at the MCG where Dawson. Jordan Dawson got the whack high, and it was and during the week the AFL conceded it should have been a free kick to result in a shot at goal to win the game. The ball that missed the post should have been reviewed and it would have stood as a goal.
The Keys ghost goal.
Them in
yep.
front. And then last night.
Yeah.
So that, any wonder they feel a little bit jilted.
So just quickly on this, while we're on the subject of the Crows, they say, I've touched base on this morning, they say they are, well, they're likely to pick up the phone in the next 24 to 48 hours. They say they do that most weeks anyway to query this non-call. But at the same time, this is a club very much at pains to admit they've got so many issues of their own doing that they're not pretending to claim they've been cheated here. This is a long, long way from the Keys situation, even Dawson. I mean, the Crows say this is a poor form body of work now across the first 6 weeks of the season. They admit they could easily be winless at this point if the planets and allied differently. So there's not going to be the jumping up and down here that we saw in the wake of the Keys situation. They had them, you know, making all sorts of demands to league headquarters.
Yeah, they were ordinary last night. At best, ordinary. And a couple of star factor players played really well. I thought Dawson was terrific. Kept him in the game. And Soligo is going to be a star. We've talked about him the last couple of weeks. But they won't be whinging about this. They know they had ample opportunity to win this game. They were lucky to be in the game,
yep.
to be fair. It should have been a six-goal margin at halftime. Such was the dominance of the Bombers. But it's going to happen to them, isn't it? This will be their year. Anything that can go wrong will go wrong against Adelaide. Because that's just the run they're in, the rut they're in as a footy club. And it's hard to see the way out in the short term, isn't it? I mean, yeah. Their year's over now, and it's over so early.
So Murphy's Law, anything that can go wrong will go wrong yeah. at the worst possible moment. I think they're living O'Toole's Law, is that Murphy was an optimist. They're deep in it at the moment.
You're right, Kingy. There's bigger things from him because, yes, we talk about the holding the ball, it should have been, but there's a couple goals in that last quarter. The Merritt goal where no one manned him up running through. This is the things that Nicks is going to go back. And he commented last night saying, I don't want to add to the fuel because there's other areas. There was... Martin's goal as well, where they get a free kick. Goldstein's by himself at centre-half forward. O'Brien didn't want to go and man him up. And then Nick Martin was near where the free kick was given, just ran to 55 out by himself. The best kick in the Essendon team. So you're spot on. They're not going to go through and blame one free kick. They're going to go through and look at all the scoring opportunities that Essendon had. And look, to be honest, Essendon should have won by 5, 6, 7 goals if they had a connected better going inside forward 50. But yeah, Adelaide have got a few more things to work on with moving forward.
Yeah, and we don't want to misrepresent them either, Jared, at the risk of repeating ourselves here. They're very much looking inward at the moment, and just listening to some of the early talk back this morning in Adelaide, the fan base are much the same as well. There is some outrage over the decision, and we had a joke about the back page, but this is a supporter base and a membership base and a football club, I think, that admit that they've got some real issues they've got to sort through.
Yeah, well, it's for us to discuss the final moments of games and what we expect out of the officiating.
So the captain's challenge will be mentioned this week. Are we still putting a line through that?
It's an interesting question because how would it have come back in the 14 seconds from the arc? Would it have come back in the umpire or would it have gone to the technical side of it and landed where they have this morning with additional broadcast vision?
It would have been a free kick awarded. Yep. If it went upstairs, there's no other option but to award the free kick.
And a shot after the siren, as it would have been as well. So Nathan Toner is the field umpire. And I think it's important to note here that there is enough time for him to make the decision that it is a ball. Well, he's the controlling. There's numbers on their back, David.
Naming and shaming.
I'm not shaming him. We've read the explanation from the AFL. But he's got the time, Jared, to call for a ball up, rather. He calls for the ball up. It's not like the siren intervenes on the decision at all. He has had the time to call for the ball up, and you can see that in the immediate aftermath of the Crows players who were initially frustrated at the holding at the ball up call, and then comes the frustration, exasperation when the siren sounds half a second thereafter.
So there is the little telltale moment. if the umpire's waiting for the ball to come out, he holds the whistle, that he blows the whistle quickly, satisfied that that Draper didn't do what he did. So if he'd held the whistle, and we would have got right to the siren as to what he would have decided then. Which...
So you've looked at it 100 times. Does Tex touch the ball back up underneath Draper or not?
Just, yeah, he does. Yeah, I'm not so even
is
sure.
Is there an out there for the umpire?
No. If you decide to go to ground and you're on top of the ball, it is your responsibility to knock the ball out.
And so players, just, they you, suck it in all
players
the time.
Jump on there, and then players will hold him in. If the umpire realizes that you deliberately go to ground, it is your responsibility whether someone holds the ball in or not. And we've seen that get paid.
What if they move it back underneath him, Hodgie?
Like, no, but if that was Draper's arm. Yeah. That was Draper's arm.
What if he's not on top of the ball and Tex pulls it back in?
It was still in his. You've seen players where they've dived onto the ball. Players have dragged it onto him, and umpires have still said, they've pinned him because you need to get rid of the ball. This is the whole rule about not going to ground. The AFL don't want you to go to ground. They want you to stay on your feet, get the ball out, keep the ball alive. It is his responsibility if he dies.
I don't think it's going to be a move, Hodgie, that gathers momentum.
So you have to... Hodgie's reading of it is spot on. You have to successfully get it out.
Yeah.
Once, if the umpire deems you've dived on top of it.
So the umpire has no outs, is what you're saying.
Not really. No. I think he felt like the ball ended up stuck underneath him rather than he frog splashed it.
We've also got three other umpires in that 50 metres. Mm. So if that had been in the centre of the ground, I can guarantee you one of the other two would have jumped on it and said, no, I saw him dive on it, he's got to get it out. But because of the situation of the game where the ball was, they wanted to put their whistle away as well.
Your point's covered off in the AFL explanation, though, by the way, Kingy, because it says, yes, it was under his chest. It had only moved to his armpit area, so therefore it is still technically in Sam Draper's possession when Tex knocks it back further underneath.
Just trying to give the umpire an out.
Yeah.
He's got nowhere to go.
Sammy's got him in the gun.
We tried.
Hodgie's prosecution has been absolutely outstanding.
And again, it's for us to debate, but the captain's call, the AFL has got no intention, has given it no mind to discussing, investigating at all. So it's as dead in the water as it's ever been.
So what I could run the scenario on the captain's call with you is they would have gone the captain's call on the high contact for Tex, and the AFL says that was correctly paid as not a free kick.
Yep.
So about 60 seconds earlier, they would have already burnt their captain's call and they wouldn't have had it left on the side.
Oh,
Shane Watson style.
I reckon that's what would have happened.
Done the review.
Because Tex was certain that he'd got high contact, but the AFL saying that was a correct call. That's not high contact.
Not a high tackle, correct play on call.
So I reckon they would have already used their captain's call. We'll come to Essendon in a moment. Just before we do, so Josh Rochelli's had two moments in the last quarter, which are going to be a lot to deal with. One where he flinches in as obvious a manner and how that fits into the modern construct. But then Mark Bickley was watching him over the ensuing minutes, and he said in our commentary before the second one happened that it was totally in his head. He'd had teammates coming to him, but he couldn't get out of it. And then he has an uncontested mark in the forward pocket for the go-ahead goal, which he drops. So it impacted him severely in the moment. And it becomes a really interesting coaching discussion with him. But he's going to have to live with that in the weeks coming. And you guys have been out on the field. But I don't imagine he's a pretty cheeky player. I don't imagine his opponents are going to let him forget that quickly. Hodgie?
Yeah, I tried to give him an out on that first one. I thought his response afterwards, so I thought the lights got into his eyes because 2 seconds later after he sort of flinched, he went back with the flight of the ball and tried to take a chest mark, a very courageous act. But then the same thing happened a couple minutes later. So looking back on it, it did look like that he hesitated. But everyone's done that. And are players going to remind him of that? Yes, they are, because that's just what you do. If you can get into your opponent's head, they will remember it. They will say it. They'll try and get you to second guess yourself. But I've played a lot of footy. I've done that a lot of times. Everyone has done that. Everyone has second guessed themselves when they're sitting under a ball and the ball's sitting up. You don't know who's coming. You've got someone, blokes come on you with a knee. And with all this talk about concussion, all this talk about people finishing their careers, there's no doubt that's going through someone's head. So anyone who's sitting back there saying he's taking a short step, he may have flinched a little bit, but everyone who's played football has done that in their career.
Yeah, we have. We've all done it. And it's a hard one to get over in the moment. It does sit with you for the rest of that game.
It might be
5 minutes into the game, might be 5 minutes to go. It doesn't matter. Once it's in your head, the others really don't need to remind you about it. You know you've done it. And you know it looks poor. and you're thinking the Monday review is going to be a slaughterhouse.
Is it though? What's the coaching in this thing, King Inoji, in your
it's changed.
Yeah. So how would someone like, you know, Matty Nix and his coaching staff address this with Rochelle? Because you don't want to kill the kid completely, do you?
Well, they know. I mean, the player knows. And I think the line coach now does all that coaching now anyway. So he'll sit down with the line coach, say, what do you think about this? Talk their way through it. And then if this happens again, we need to make a statement that, you know, this is not you. You're going to get through this. And look for outcomes, not punishments. But in the old days, they'd put it on the screen and they would replay it. No one would say anything. They'd just play it three or four times.
What they would do is they would show both of those incidents, but then what they would do is they would say, hey, this happened in the game, everyone's done it, but the follow-up, they would show the positive one where he ran back 30 seconds or 10 seconds after he made that initial mistake. He went back with the flight of the ball and they'll say, see, this is what you can do, this is what you're capable of, and this is what we expect everyone else to do. So they'll show it just to let everyone else know that, look, we don't stand for that, we need to put our body in and on the line. But then they'll follow up with a positive, just so he's walking away going, well, I can do it, and just show that everyone can do it.
So like a silent movie, like the old days.
Oh, yeah, they're the worst ones. When you're sitting in a group of 40 players
and no one talks,
and all the coaches, and no one says anything, and they just play the vision, and then rewind, play the vision, rewind, you feel very small.
Oh.
You feel very small.
Until someone finally speaks.
And then the coach says, never want to see this again. And then just plays the next bit of vision.
Right.
And you know you never want to be in that position again.
Oh, lordy.
So that's an intimidating moment. That's a hard one to get through, Hodgie.
You can't sink any lower into your seat when that happens. But it'll be next week when they play North Melbourne. If he chirps at anyone, you know there's going to be a handful of North Melbourne blokes reacting to what he did. Because people watch it. People don't want to be in that position. But North are definitely going to bring it up.
He's going to have to curb the other side of it for a while. I mean, the shushing of the crowd last week against Carlton and the carry-on. And you can't be both. If you're going to give it, you've got to wear the odd blow. Yep. On the back with the flight. You can't jump out of the boat and then be firing some sledges out.
I actually don't think young kids are like that anymore. Back in the day, if you did something like that, you'd be quiet for the next 10 weeks. Yep. Kids water off a duck's back, I reckon. They have that much lip about them these days. I'll be watching intently. I'll be watching intently in their next game to sort of see if someone has a go, what's his reaction? If he kicks a nice goal, is he going to go and give it to someone?
He is the Adelaide Crows at the moment. He had a very good game. He did some really classy things and played pretty well, and he had a hand in a lot of their scoring. And then he lets himself down a couple of times. He's exactly what the Crows are at the moment. There's a few things they're doing quite well. But there's parts that are just crawling their whole game.
At 1-5, they've been given the prime time fixture too, Sam. Yeah. So this has ramifications not just for the Crows, but for the overall fixture and for prime time. And
but I was entertained. I don't know about you guys. They were poor, of course they were. But I was entertained. So did it tick the box from an entertainment?
Last night's fine. But if they're 1-5 and they're 2-6, that's hard to carry prime time.
And they're on the clock at the moment as well in regards to the fixture from round 16 onwards, which is going to be confirmed in the next couple of weeks. So that's another factor because everyone was being assessed in real time. So they got North Melbourne next. They've got a showdown coming up after that on Thursday night. Finally, a standalone showdown, which is what they've wanted forever, against Port Adelaide.
All right, we'll come back to Essendon and run the analysis over the Bombers' 4-2 start for the season. We've solved a few things already with Sam Edmund. You're listening to Crunch Time for Azito. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. And Freeway Motor Group, Cranbourne, Frankston, Mornington and Lilydale. There are going to be words ringing in my ears for the rest of the day.
Absolutely, the Crows were robbed. Right in front of me. Right in front of me.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
Yeah, they came out after half-time, kicked 4 goals in a row, put a bit of a gap on us, and you know that momentum can be hard to arrest away from home, you know, when the Crows have got their tails up. So, you know, I thought it was a really good game of footy. I thought Crows held up their end of the bargain, and so did we. And, you know, went down right to the wire and could have gone either way. But I'm pretty comfortable saying that our players, you know, deserve the end result.
Essendon coach Brad Scott, the Bombers by 3 points at Adelaide Oval last night. They're 4-2. Oh, just... Robert Shaw's chimed in. So he was the Fitzroy coach in the murder game. He's chimed in with, the footy gods bus has a very big turning circle. 33 years in the making. Oh, we can laugh on this side of the border. All right, the Bombers and what they were able to do last night. Luke Hodge, what did you see?
We spoke earlier about Adelaide and the entertaining. I reckon Essendon are an entertaining team. We've watched them a number of times this year. You look through some of the players, Merritt, Caldwell, Gresham, Stringer's been excellent. But I see a bit of life and a bit of belief in that side. Their pressure has been through the roof. That was noticeable last night. But you sort of sit back at halftime. The game should have been over at halftime. It was 33 inside 50s to 16, and they had a 5-point lead. Their ability to convert, and they've been really good prior to that. Once they've been so efficient going inside forward 50 so far this season, but it really hurt them last night, which kept Adelaide in the game. But I think Brad Scott would be walking away going, he's got so much to work with. They've got so many players in that team that you sit back that are playing good football, but they can only get better. Gresham, like, this is the first preseason Gresham's done in a number of years, and you can just see the spark that he has. He had 26 last night, had six clearances, was able to push up high into the midfield to have an impact. You sort of look at Essendon and go, they're going along quite nicely at the moment.
They are. I'd say the biggest thing that hit me last night was the organisation of their deep three, or their closest three to their own goal, the defensive guys. Mackay, Laverty, McGrath swooping, Martin swooping, Redmond. Just their organisation behind the ball. So when you look at the numbers, so they've had 50 intercepts. They've won the ball back 50 times between the arcs. Mm. If you go back the last 6 years, so 120-odd games of footy for Essendon, they've only had better than that three times.
This has been their key flaw, hasn't it?
It has. So they've worked tirelessly on that through the summer. I was out there watching it through the preseason, and it didn't come through in the first month of footy. It was a mess. We called it a mess because they were out of sorts, they were out of position, and it made them look awful as a footy team. They just couldn't defend. But it was rigid last night. So they had enough heat on the ball. Hodgie just touched on the pressure then. They had enough heat on the Crows trying to bring the ball out of their back 50 to just dump it long. And then you just saw them regularly just make their way back to the footy, build again, build again, build again. So in the end, the Crows have 16 inside 50s because they can't move the ball. So there's an element of game day, that one-off coaching in that. But I think if they can hang on to that, this is the first time we'll see Essendon with a rigid defensive plan. We haven't seen that for years. So you've got to acknowledge that. That's a huge number. 50. The AFL average is about 36, 37. So it's well and truly over that. And to get that reward, I'm sort of glad for Essendon they won that game, because it's hard to fuel this defensive model if you're not winning. Because players go, oh, we're doing everything right. Mm. They tell us we're doing everything right. We're still not winning. You know, like, so I think it's a good result for them, Hodgie, in terms of building this defensive system.
Yeah, well, I think they had 51 tackles at halftime. That's most tackles in about 6 or 7 years to that stage of a game, but it's their intent, it's their mindset. And I think that's what Scotty brought in last year. He knew that there was parts last year, Essendon have always been able to transition the ball or move the ball quickly to score, but it's the grit and the want. Like, you look at Caldwell last night, 10 tackles, Durham 9, backed up after what he did last week. Even Jake Stringer, he's buying into that side of the game. Yes, we talk about Jake Stringer and his goals and his power and his burst taking on the tackler, but his intent to want to chase and tackle, and it's probably led there by the skipper. We've spoken about it time and time again.
Hobbs was good too.
Yes, this is the best part. With Essendon, normally it would be like one or two blokes that you could talk about in the past that are consistently having a crack to put on that defensive pressure. We're now going through 7 or 8, and this is jumping off topic, but I just saw his name then. But Harrison Jones, he's someone who he gives everything. A couple of contests that he had last night where he would be up the ground, next thing you'd see him flashing inside forward 50 just because he knows that's his role, to go and create a contest to bring it to ground. It looks like they're all trying to buy into what Scotty's doing. Are they playing pretty football all the time? No, not all the time, but that's a part of their development. It's a part of them learning. Scotty's had him for 18 months, and you can sort of start to see what he's trying to bring with this group.
Said a couple of weeks ago, and so I've given Essendon some clips over the last month, but we've stood up for the captain. I think he's done an amazing job in trying circumstances. Very hard when your club's struggling, as a overall club, not just on field, to be the guy, to be the man. And every time I watch him, his defensive actions lead the group, the rundown tackles, the wants to shift the course of the game, to impact scoring, to not accept that there's a down the line kick. He wants more. He'll bring the ball into the corridor. He'll run and carry. He'll go that extra yard for the team. And I said it a couple of weeks ago. I still think he's the best captain in the comp right now in terms of delivering upon what he needs to do, not just game day, but during the week, and trying to shift the course and lift the standards at Essendon. No one trains harder. No one leads better in the game right now than Zach Merritt.
I feel like Sam Durham's past two weeks have been profound.
Good call.
They haven't had and what he might represent to them. If that's his level now, and you think about his journey to get there, I'm struck by him now. If you'd said, what's the piece they need in the middle? It's Sam Durham. Yeah. And I don't know whether they thought they were going to get it out of him, but gosh, that's been a couple of good weeks.
I think that shows his hunt mentality, though, because last week it was the Bont. It was, you're going after the Bont, you need to shut him down. He had flexibility. Last night when he was on Dawson at times, he still had that hunt mentality, being physical with him, trying to push him to certain positions that that the skipper didn't want to go. But I think that's the mindset that they need to keep bringing as a midfield, is go and hunt the opposition. And then their natural flair, speed and ability will be able to come out on top of that, because what they've done the last 2 weeks in the midfield has been pretty impressive.
They're out there, Jared. He's one of those mid-season picks.
Yeah.
You know, they're out there. Like, everyone keeps telling me, oh, there's not enough talent around the globe at the moment to, you know, bring in an extra team or to rebuild or to do this or to do that. They're there. You know, we talk a lot about John Newcombe being that type of guy as well for Hawthorn. So players are there. You've just got to get them to the level with their fitness and educate them a fraction, because it's a different game. In the suburbs, Hodgie, the AFL game is a different game in the burbs than it is of a weekend at AFL standard, with the spatial, you know, defending and all that sort of stuff. But no, he's been a steal. In a lot of ways, Adrian Dodoro has done better with those picks than he has his first round selections.
Yes, Hodgie.
Got one for you, Kingy. Your coach of Essendon, this week they got Wright coming back in. He's been your main goal kicker with Langford the last couple of years. Jones, who I just spoke about, who has been exceptional, doing that selfless work rate, bringing the ball to ground. And then they got Goldie and Draper. Can they play the three of them and bring Wright back in? Or is it one of the ruckmen or Jones? Who would you leave out of those four blokes if you bring him Wright back in?
I think they got Goldstein for this period to bridge through the early weeks of the season, to get Draper to full fitness, because he had an impacted off-season, and Peter Wright as well. So I think Goldstein would be the one that would make way, and your second ruck becomes a mix of Jones and maybe even Wright if you want to run him a little bit. But I think Goldstein, naturally. I mean, you're still in the development phase for young Jones. You can't be dropping Jones after what he's shown the last couple of weeks.
So I was thinking, you've got me fixated on Sam Draper now, just thinking back over his night. I'm not sure the frog splash was even the dumbest thing he did in the single game. The little toe poke when they'd gone 21 points up and he gives away the 50-metre penalty, kicking the ball away, and it changes the whole momentum of the game. Then a bit, it felt old school. Now, I'm sure they'll say rotation, but it felt old
school. How long?
He sat for 12 minutes for the rest of the second quarter on the bench. It felt to me like naughty corner.
Oh, really?
That, don't be doing that again. And then he started the third quarter in the ruck, which was a bit of, now go and make amends. And then their plan, or they clearly like Draper versus Paulais. Yeah. And they tried it all night. And it didn't work. It didn't work. And then he finally takes the pack mark.
Big hanger, wasn't it?
Yeah, but then doesn't kick the goal.
No, he reverted back to the
probably
norm.
Just as well they won when you think back over the catalogue.
That's him, though, isn't it?
It is.
That is. This is why we talk about these guys all the time. They have a happy knack of being the guy in these situations to cock things up for your team when you've done it all for 120 minutes. You're steering beautifully, and then he does what he does.
Hey, but at the end of the day, he won the game for him.
He did. I'm happy to say. I reckon it's high IQ, not low IQ. I reckon it was genius for him. He got away with it. They got away with it. I reckon it was high IQ to disguise. Just nod off for a couple of seconds on top of the pill.
You have a low threshold of genius.
So what does it give them a chance at, Hodgie? They're 4-2, right side of the ledger with Anzac Day, which is such a big occasion. Those games can exist in their own subset. For a team that I reckon talked small target for the most part coming in, they've given themselves a hope here.
Yeah, they have. And I think you look back at last year, we were talking them up middle of last year. But then I think it was about round 17 when Scotty came out and said, we're not fit enough, we're not strong enough, we need to continue to work and grow. And I think they've improved a lot. Like, they had the mindset shift in the off-season for a group of players to go away on a camp that they paid for rather than going on a footy trip. I think that's starting to show out that there is real buy-in, and we're seeing that with offense and defense. They're still in the development phase. Are they going to mix it with the top four or five in the league at this stage? Probably not. But I think as an Essendon supporter, what they've seen, the fight, the pressure, the belief that the players have, I reckon it's going to give them a lot of confidence there that they're striving to jump into that top eight, because what are they now? They're snuck in with the win, sitting 4-2. But as we said, Anzac Day next week, there's no bigger than that for the Essendon Football Club to sort of see how far have they come.
Not a horrible draw either, Jared. So West Coast after that, admittedly over in Perth, the Giants back here, North Melbourne after that, and then Richmond back at the MCG, of course, for Dreamtime. So a bit of a mixed bag, chance to get a real foothold in the season.
They should be the right side of the ledger for a long way from here,
yeah,
I think.
They should be. And you know, you look at their profile, they've still got a lot of work to do defensively. That's the best I've seen them last night. So if that is going to be them, then we'll talk about them differently. But
edge.
They're bottom two or three in the comp for being able to defend ball movement from the opposition and those sorts of things. You know, defensive 50 hasn't been at its best this year, but it's you got to adjust with the evidence. So good performance last night. Let's see if it stays.
Good win for the Bombers and eventful night at Adelaide Oval. We'll look back to Thursday nights and how that recasts the fortunes of a couple of teams as well. Today is Super Saturday thanks to Supergroups. It's the biggest Saturday of the AFL season so far. It starts here at the MCG after crunch time, Collingwood and Port Adelaide. Then it moves over to Marvel for the Blues and the Giants, who meet at the most perfect time given the circumstances of each. And then the mouthwatering double header to finish it off, the Lions and the Cats at the Gabba, while it's the 58th derby between West Coast and Fremantle. I got told this morning that they've made a list in the West of, what is it, 300 and how many players? 364 players who have played in the derby through 57, one through 364. You'd be a bit flat if you're 364 this morning in print, I reckon. But the full catalogue's been listed. Jeez,
who is it?
That's a collector's item.
You know who it is, Jerry.
From 1 tonne to 8 tonne.
You would not have started that discussion not knowing who 364
is. Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
We put pressure on ourselves because we expect a lot, and we understand that externally there's an expectation of us. That's okay. You know, it's we think there's a lot of promise in our team. As much as we, our desire is to get some momentum and string wins together, we know we've got a challenge on our hands to be in that space. If we front up like we have tonight, a couple of other occasions where we've had good outcomes, you know, we'll be in the mix. But it remains to be seen, and we understand that. So if the question marks come over consistency, that's just a fact at the moment. We just the only way we can change it is to win games.
It remains to be seen. Luke Beveridge in the aftermath of Thursday night's 60-point winner over St Kilda. 1 Judd, 2 Fife, 3 Cousins, 4 Pavlich, 5 Glenn Jakovic. And a cheerio this morning to Justin Bollenhagen.
3-6-4, Jared. 3-6-4.
Four league games, made his debut in a derby in 2010.
I think that's how the salary cap read over there too for a while.
Who's the ruthless reporter who did that? Surely he could have just done top 50.
What a task. It is rather mean to go all the way through, isn't it?
You were upset with a couple in the 200 semi. You thought they should have been higher?
Yeah, well, I've got an issue with 361 v 363, to be honest with you. I reckon surely, Tim Ruffles very fortunate to be 361.
Surely just throwing darts at a board the last few.
It's all in the
but
West.
You've got to write someone as last, Hodgie.
Someone has to be last.
Yeah.
It's like when they do the grand final in prospect and all 26 players rated and someone has to be last.
Usually a personal gripe there somewhere, isn't there? I'm putting him last.
So all there was for the Bulldogs to do on Thursday night was come out and win. It's all you can do in to respond to a week like that. Now, we'll analyse the who and the why and the how and the what against as we go. But as a definitive statement at the end of a week, to put a game away so quickly and so ruthlessly, it really was an impressive effort.
It was an amazing effort, Jared. The club is in the cauldron of the media storm. Like it's on. You can feel it. Bevo during the pre-match, he looked rattled. He looked on edge. He's talking with Brad Johnson, who's probably the nicest guy in the world. There's no need to be fearful of what's coming in terms of questions. But he asked him, "How are you?" He said, "I'm fine." And I thought, "Oh, he's not fine." Look, it's clearly getting to him. You wonder whether that was going to go through the group. But then they come out and just went whack. Mm-hmm. I think there's something special about that when you can do that as a club. And he's got his detractors, Bevo, and Kane's come at him pretty hard this year. I think he's a different coach. He's a different guy. He pulls different levers. And it's okay to drop a player. It's okay to start a player as a sub to try and get a response from the player and from the team. I don't understand the negativity of that. That's the coach's right. He's there to challenge performance. They'd been ordinary for a couple of weeks. He had to do something. So I think when you assess this game, everyone's going to go to Bailey Dale and say, you've mistreated this guy. He should have been in the team from minute one and he had 40 touches and, you know, was everywhere. But maybe you get that game because of how you've given him tough love. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah. We debated that in real time on Thursday night, and it depends how you're coming at the beverage debate.
Yeah.
Sort of whole of club, I thought they had a really good week. So the press conference last Friday night was no good. Ends with the mixed messaging of it. They set that right straight away. Beveridge was impressive on Tuesday. The administration was excellent in warding off the disharmony. And then he coaches well with the players. The veterans respond and Norton out of the... So as a whole package, I don't think you can do any more than that
in a
week where you can freeze.
I like the royal family approach. Don't explain, don't complain. At the end, you're going to judge us on wins and losses.
What do you mean by that, though?
For what we tell you, you'll pick apart. You won't believe. You'll make your own mind up. You're already going to the press conference with an angle. I'm going to get an answer to this question here because I'm going to follow up an article and I'm going to write this.
Yeah, but the way that Bevo spoke on Tuesday, you couldn't take any other tack other than the one he laid out because it was clear, it was identifiable, and it was consistent. Yeah. Whereas in the wake of the loss the week before, as horrific as it was, he had it five different ways. And it led to the old, quote-unquote, strong conversations on the Monday with the coach around, well, what are we saying here? What are we doing and what are we saying? Because they're different things. They align themselves on the Monday and he delivered it on the Tuesday. Yeah. And that set the week in motion.
And it's only forgotten because they won. If they had got beaten...
Yeah, winning covers everything.
Yeah, but doesn't the winning come as a result of we're not letting any of this fray?
Yeah, I don't think they have to tell us what they're doing internally.
No, but what they did internally
he confused it.
Gets that performance, doesn't it? Well, it has to play a role in getting that performance.
Yeah, I don't know if it affects the playing group as much as we think. They're still on task. They're still worried about their small role in the system. They're all trying to get better. They're all trying to get a game. Some of these guys just trying to get another opportunity. Some of these guys trying to perform. So I feel that they don't need to tell us whether they're resetting or rebuilding, if you like, on the run. They don't really need to tell us that. The evidence will be there. They didn't do it at the end of last year, so you can say they're not. So if they do it at the end of this year, we'll make judgments to that. But I don't know if they need to tell us all those things.
But it's there in front of us when we're seeing these kids playing. When we're seeing the kids playing and we're seeing the players not picked, it's there in front of us to dissect, is it not?
Yeah, but that doesn't mean...
We're watching Caleb Daniel in the stands, we're watching Bailey Dale as a sub, we're watching Jack McRae VFL, and we're watching their replacements who have also been poor, then clearly we're open to ask the question, aren't we?
So do you play a 30-year-old poorly performing player, or do you give a youngster a
chance? Yeah, and I'm not giving you an answer. I'm just saying that's the debate, isn't it? When you've got the accolades that those players have got watching on, you're always going to get that debate.
We'll keep this conversation going with Luke Hodge in a moment's time, and then add in the St Kilda side of it. Is this the physical performance that's going to bob up here and there? Are we buying that on Crunch Time next? Welcome back to the Round 6 edition of Crunch Time for Azito. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you and Freeway Motor Group, Cranbourne, Frankston, Mornington and Lilydale. Jared Waitley, Sam Edmund, Luke Hodge. And David King with you. We have delved right back through last night. Actually, Sam, for those who have just joined us, recap for us. The AFL's verdict is in. The Crows should have been paid a free kick for holding the ball at the death last night.
To use their word, technically should have been a holding the ball free kick, Jared. But at the same time, I'll just read it in part here. The AFL saying, very challenging one for the umpires in this situation with a ball on the ground to see exactly where the ball is. A large number of players, they say there were 17 Essendon players in the immediate area. Who has control of it? On ground level, they were not certain of all these factors, so they didn't pay it, which is the correct approach at the time.
Okay. We're mid-conversation on the Bulldogs, about to touch on the Saints. Luke Hodge, what was the impression that the Bulldogs left with you on Thursday night?
We know that Bevo doesn't like changing plays around too much as far as Norton. Everyone's been calling for him to go down back, but he's been pretty... pretty confident just to keep him in that forward line. What I did like about Bevo was his ability to be able to change their style of play. What we do know of the Doggies is they push numbers high up the field, and it's a link-up handball to go as fast as you can to try and beat your opposition back to your goal. But they changed. They had almost 150 marks, which zapped the St Kilda energy. But it just showed that, yes, they do have the ability to go fast, but also the composure as well to not go as quick when you don't have to. It's 40 more than what they've averaged for a year. So that what stood out to me was a clear change from them, that it wasn't just go as fast as you can, because that's where they got caught up last week against Essendon. Essendon kicked 7 or 8 turnover goals from them just from silly turnovers by trying to go too fast, where I thought that was a smart tactical plan from the Bulldogs coaching staff, but also smart from the players showing their ability to be able to change their style as well.
The Norton conversation is transfixing in a way. Early in the season when he's playing forward, he's not targeted. Then he moves up and roams around the ground. Then needs be, he goes back to the goal square, he's targeted and he kicks 6 goals.
Yeah.
Like,
so that's the point.
That's the best version of Aaron Norton. It's just when Jamar is there, that's not how they either choose to play him, or it's not how they can play him.
But this is my point. This is why I'll still say today that he should be centre half back, because they've got, it's the role. It's not necessarily the player, it's the role. So you're targeting that player. If that's Jamar in those same targets, you're getting the same results.
Why can't they coexist together?
Because games are won by winning the ball back. They've got enough key position forwards to kick a score. I just honestly think that Jones, Buku Kamis is doing some great things. He's developing along beautifully, but he's not a centre half back. He's an intercept third tall. I still think they're one key interceptor short of the absolute best teams in the comp. Who's their Tom Stewart? Who's the guy that's going to set it all up? Who's their McGovern? Who's the guy in a final that you've got to worry to go around? It can't be Jones, because Jones is too deep. So I still sit with that. And I think he's All-Australian caliber centre-half-back. He's a star, this guy. But does he impact games like this regularly enough to be the 9-year deal, to be the million-dollar commodity? He's a top-liner. So has a day out, Hodgie, kick 6, and you go, fantastic, needed it, got it. But I still think the conversation is there to be had.
He's not going to move him back. Not after that. If Bevo was that confident to keep him there, and I agree with you. If you want to be Ugal Hagen's forward line, and as we saw last week, Norton was playing at centre half forward, and that was at a centre bounce. It had Ugal Hagen in the forward 50, pretty much by himself with littles around him. And it's shown me that Bevo has a lot more confidence in Ugal Hagen for the future. But when you have a bloke who's kicked 6, Bevo's been pretty stubborn to keep him there, and he got rewarded with it last night. But if you throw in then, now there's Lobb, Darcy, Norton, Ugal Hagen, where are they? Are they going to halt Darcy's development because they want to play Lobb? Well, Lobb's coming out of contract now. So it puts up a few questions for the coaching staff of where they want to go moving forward if they want to continue with Norton and Ugal Hagen on that same forward line.
Yeah, so in the end, it comes back to how regularly can you service these guys. Mm.
So if Jamara was out for 6 weeks, Norton would kick 30 goals. But that's not how he plays when Jamara's there. So he's only that player because he came out of the square on Thursday night.
It's as good as I've seen him move on the lead. Like, he's normally a pack-crashing mark, and he has to survive by contested marking the ball.
So when Jamara comes back, It's, I know nothing about nothing, but I wouldn't. I would still have Norton the out of the square target, and I would find a different role to play Jamara for a little while.
Does he have the tank? That's the only issue. Does Hugel Hagen have the tank to be working up the ground? Because Norton works very hard as a centre forward. He gets a lot of his marks up on the wing. He's that sort of link up player that they need to get it deeper inside forward 52. Hugel Hagen, is his body big enough, fit enough, strong enough to carry on that centre forward role? Because it's a pretty important role, and it's a big toll on the body with the work rate and the physicality that you get served to you as well.
I still think this guy can win the Rising Star, Sam Darcy.
Yeah.
What he's doing is just ridiculous. The reach that he has, when he marks the ball, there isn't a player in the competition that can get a fist on that ball. There isn't. So he's so tall, so long at the footy.
Can you believe the land of the Giants have got set up there? We haven't even spoken about Jordan Croft. Like, he's the other father-son's come in at 201 centimetres. What are they feeding the kids these days? What do they do with them? Like, Lob, I haven't seen Lob play like that for ages,
to be honest. And this is why it's come back to the coach. He would have said, hey, mate, you know, you smell the roses here. You're in at the moment. We've got Jamara. He's coming back. It's a week, maybe two, but he's coming back. You need to perform here to hang around and coexist with these other guys. If you don't play your role, it's an easy decision. So make it hard for me. He'd be saying, make it hard for me to leave you out. So all the pieces work when you're a coach that can motivate and challenge. So I give him all the credit for this. And the setup, you get six goals out of Norton, terrific. You target him seven times, perfect. It's exactly what you want. But the challenges come when the magnets come back.
Yep.
How does it look when Jamara's there? Is Jamara getting the 10 targets and Norton goes back to two or three again? I mean, that's just a waste of a commodity.
Well, it is. If you're going to pay him $700,000-$900,000 to be almost somebody to take seven or eight marks up at centre-half forward, not pushing deep to kick a goal, you're right there putting him. There's a big hole at centre-half back for him to go and do the stuff that you said, but... We're convinced now that Bevo's not going to. No, we can talk about as much as we can, yeah. But Bevo was, he's centre-half forward, he's my centre-half forward, and until Hugel Hagen could get the build up that tank, it's going to probably stay that way.
But so the question is, and we talk about this all the time, preliminary final night, you're going to have a vulnerability at centre-half back until you fix it. So I don't care how you fix it, until we see it's fixed, it won't win you the big final.
Who's on the hot seat for Razorback 4x4? There's nothing like Razorback 4x4. So Ross Lyon, I reckon he's at that phase where he just tells the truth. Unvarnished, undisguised, and he spoke about his fear in the lead-up that they were physically cooked, and that's what they looked like. So the Red Dog had a run too many and couldn't go a yard. It was a bit of a setback for our Red Dog.
It was a setback. And to be fair, their midfield... They just look so one-paced and so bland. You know, we talked about the Adelaide Crows being vanilla. I reckon they're almost mung bean ice cream style, these guys. There's absolutely no flavour to them at all. There's nothing.
Mung bean ice cream.
But Dermot's a mung beaner. He loves them. I just wonder what they're doing with it. I mean, they've tried. Sinclair hasn't been that same line breaker this year that he has been in the past when he's been thrown in there. They're admirable. I love the honesty in which they play, Ross and Steele and Windhager and those guys, but there's no zhuzh. There's nothing that really breaks a tackle or steps through.
Well, they don't play Sinclair in there anymore for some reason.
Well, they have in fits and starts over the last couple of weeks, but it's a real concern. There's no real... You don't see it till you see it. There's no torchbearer in there, Hodgie, that's a follow-me type line-breaking midfielder.
But
I don't know if he's on the list.
That's always been the knock of St Kilda. Their top-end talent, when push comes to shove and you need someone to stand up or do something, who's going to do it for you? They got some really good quality physical players who have been consistent for them for a long period of time, but they don't have a Bont who'll take a game. They don't have a Butters or a Rosie who'll break a game open. And that's always been their hit. I know when Ross got appointed, they sort of said, we're happy with where our list's at, but we're aiming for success. I don't think their list is at that top-end part that's going to push them into the eight or into the top four. They might sneak in as they did last year, but you're sort of looking at that there, and there's a lot better list and a lot better 23s that have been put out this weekend.
So when they went really hard for Jordan Degoe at the end of 2022 to get that A grader in, that difference maker that Hodgie speaks about.
Hard to get, aren't they? And is Filippo that guy? Like, where does he play? Like, he's one of those guys for me at the moment. Look, he looks good at half forward, but doesn't really do a lot. You throw him in the midfield, he's not really getting it done in there. So where's he going to play? What's he going to be at the end? When he's the finished product, what's he delivering?
Were they just gassed? Were they just gassed, Jared?
Like, yes, they were, but it doesn't negate the rest of the issues.
No, but he's walking the tightrope, isn't he, Ross Lyon, between fact versus excuse. Yeah. I thought he walked it successfully, but maybe you only get one of those. And there's a lot of clubs that have had this, been on the rough end of the pineapple, Hodgie, with the fixture early part of the season. We saw Melbourne a couple of weeks ago against Brisbane here, just look cooked. It's a brutal schedule the Saints are living at the moment.
We've seen it the last couple of Friday nights. I saw Essendon get pants by Port Adelaide, thinking these guys are one pace. They don't look in. They look terrible. And then they come out and they do the same thing to the Bulldogs the next week. And then the Bulldogs respond. So I'm probably allowing St Kilda a little bit of a leeway, because the way Ross does coach them, it needs full energy. Doggies did the right thing. They took the game away from them. They were composed with their ball movement. They're able to take a lot of marks just to take St Kilda's life out of the game. But I'm sort of sitting here going, I'm not going totally off St Kilda. Like, three games in 11 days, two interstate travels in that time, it is going to zap you, especially when the Doggies had a bit of motivation to come out after the performance they put on last week.
If you play Saturday, 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 Jared, that's three games in how many days?
18. 21.
15? 15. Yeah. How are you going, Hodgie? I should have asked, Hodgie. You got three different hands. I don't buy the three games in 13 days.
Okay.
Look, it's not a massive shift. So everyone says, oh, it's the third game in 13 days. If you go Saturday, 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 it's 15 days.
Ross said though he was worried driving to Marvel.
Yeah, he was. But they've had the five-day break, I can understand. That's a tough one, because you really have...
Well, they've had two already.
Yeah, that was
it's
his
the travel. It's the travel in as well, though, Kingy. It's the travels in there as well, the back-to-back travel.
Yeah.
Gather around.
So gather around.
And they're back to Adelaide this weekend too.
So I'm less worried about the why and just more so you could just see it. So Melbourne had that game against Brisbane, I think. St Kilda have that game. But the trouble for St Kilda is they don't get a bye here. They don't get any reprieve. They're going to Port Adelaide to face that midfield. I'm a little bit fearful of what that looks like on Friday night.
They're going to have to bash themselves
to victory. They're going to have to go Carlton style of, you know, mid last year. To just drag him into the trenches. They can't play on the outside.
Razorback 4x4, Australia's best four-wheel drive seat covers with protection like no other. The broader issues of the week is that was headlined by the tribunal's decision around Charlie Cameron reducing a suspension to a fine using exceptional and compelling circumstances, and particularly Charlie Cameron's off-field work in the Indigenous community. Cranky Fags is my favourite Fags, and he was proper Cranky Fags yesterday.
When you go to the tribunal, you use everything at your disposal to try and free up your player, which every club does. And if a bloke's got a good record, he's played 200 games and he's never been suspended for a match, you would at least give that a mention, I think. Otherwise, you'd be remiss in your duty to that player. So it was mentioned. I'm pretty sure it wasn't the main reason why the charge was downgraded to low impact. I think if you look at that incident and you look at Lever, we're talking about impact here. So for me, impact is impact. So was Jake Lever hurt? No, he wasn't. Did he go off for a concussion test? No, he didn't. Was there a medical report from the Melbourne Football Club about his condition? No, there wasn't. So on every measure, that the impact of that incident was low. But yeah, they talked about it. It was at the low end of medium impact. Well, I'm arguing to you that it was low impact.
Low end of medium is still medium.
Mate, interview the tribunal. Don't interview me. I didn't make the decision, okay?
Great. Narky Fags is the best Fags. And he was like that right through, Sam.
That was consistent Fags. Consistently narky too. It didn't matter what the journos are. He was just in one of those moods, which must mean, Jared, big game coming up today. Big game.
Hodgie, you've seen that firsthand.
I did laugh very hard when you played that at the top of the show, because he always tries to be the pleaser and always tries to be a calm influence. Yeah, it's a big game tonight, and I think that's what Sammy just spot on. It's exactly what we saw. He was trying to talk his way out of just saying, hey, it was smart. He's had a good record, and we don't think it was that forceful of a tackle. But then when he realised the media would not let it go, it did Cranky Fags come out, which is good for us, because it gives you a bit of a laugh when you see the old father figure who gets a little bit steamy every now and then.
Didn't have a great week, did they?
No, they didn't.
The AFL?
No. Well, it's... Half of it is their responsibility to tidy up the error. But the first part is out of their control, is they have an independent tribunal. And every now and then they go, what the hell's going on here?
What
be,
I loved.
Don't be that independent.
And Jared, you might have been responsible for this. What I loved was the list was always going to come out, wasn't it? Yeah. In the aftermath. Well, okay then. Well, who else qualifies? Oh, here's the 38 guys who have played north of 200 and never been suspended. So there's your hall pass.
And but you just know, you know that one of those 35 blokes, if they end up on the same, they won't get it. There'll be a nuance that doesn't allow them to get it, and that will cause the second wave of the problem, which is why it should have just been straightened out on Thursday at the appeals board.
We spoke about this on your show, that the AFL's official line was, this is a very rare combination of factors here, not just the good character, but also the lower end of careless, the clean medical report, the 20-kilo weight difference, everything. It was like the pokies down at the local RSL that never goes off. It finally went off, and the AFL saying it'll never go off again.
Yeah, it'll go off again. But I enjoyed Chris Scott's. Well, it would just be offensive if my blokes didn't get it.
Yeah.
He's got a set of them who are plus 200 games with no suspensions. So, his ration, and he would, you just go, it'd be offensive if they weren't regarded in the same good character.
Does
and
it
he's
work,
right.
Does it work against anyone? It can work for
well,
you.
It used to work against you.
So are we now going to go the other way?
So the problem with it is...
The pokey go off again?
We try to be super careful to separate the action from the character so that you don't assassinate the character for something that goes wrong on the field. But it not only invites it, it actually empowers it. So we're going to say your character is directly influential in what happens on the field. That's
ridiculous.
That's wrong in a legal system.
We have had it. We've had the Toby tax for years. The irony of that was we've had the Toby tax return. So he got off when he got a dividend. He got a payment. He got off when he probably should have gone off in the first place. A bad couple of weeks.
And he's caused all this issue. That's what everyone was reverted back to. I don't reckon they would have fought this if Toby Green got a week. The reason why they went so hard at it is because Toby didn't get a week. He didn't even get looked at. That's why they had to go and challenge it, which opened up a whole can of worms.
We're happy in the end with the Zach Butters.
No, you carried the day on that.
Where do we sit with that?
I think there was a clear piece of vision, which I hadn't seen when we discussed it on Monday, which illustrated the force of the high contact.
Oh, massive hit.
So it wasn't the glancing blow that I'd thought it was in the first two angles. There was an angle that showed the sweat getting knocked off his face.
It's not only that, when they said that he was attempting to pick up the ball, you're not going in at that speed to pick up the ball. If you're going to pick up the ball, you slow down, you turn your body, you pick it up. His hands went down because he knew exactly what he was doing. He tried to make body contact, and he got him high. That's a suspension every day of the week.
So what's that? That's a clearing of the area, Hodgie, and then he circles back to pick the ball up.
Well, he's used his body to impact an opponent. And we've always said if you get him high, you're going to get held accountable. He did not try and pick up the ball. His hands went down, but he knew exactly what he was doing.
The ball's considered a bonus at that stage. He's looking for contact.
100%.
He knows at that speed, it's inevitable.
He's clearing it out to come back and pick up the pearl.
I don't think he's caring about the ball.
Yeah.
He's just making sure that Banfield doesn't get it.
And it was particularly pertinent because it all happens around the retirement of Nathan Murphy. So another promising young career that gets cut short through concussion, Sam.
24 years of age, definition of in your footy prime, isn't it really? After Angus Brayshaw, and they're not the first, they won't be the last. We know that. There'll be more to follow when it comes to being medically retired. So he was wrestling with this. There was so much anxiety, Jared, within Nathan Murphy about what to do. He wasn't sleeping well, and you can understand that. What am I doing? Is what I do going to be the right thing? How can I be sure? And then it was almost a relief to him to be told that this isn't for you anymore. And the relief in that, as disappointing as it is for him, was absolute. Now what happens is really pertinent in terms of balancing the books across the competition. I think that time is of the essence here for the AFL to finally put out a state of play to clubs. What happens when players are medically retired in contract, and the players are going to get paid? That's obvious. But what does the club carry? Is it inside the cap or is it outside the cap?
Outside the cap. Has to
yes.
be.
So, Hodgie, I want to ask you the question of this particular circumstance. So, across the summer, Collingwood extended his contract by a year, knowing full well that his career was in a state of flux. It was going to be outside his hands, and they had no certainty whether he was going to play 2024. So, if they extend his contract to 2025, say that's $500,000. They've made that decision knowingly in that phase. Do they really have the right to have that sit outside the cap?
Well, they did that so he didn't rush back. They did that so they were showing him, and they were saying to him, look, you've put your body on the line for us on the biggest day of the year. You need time to go back and make a rush call. If he was told he only had this year and you've got to play to get another contract, that took any pressure away from him of rushing to get back in to try and prove that he's good enough to play football. He went back and made a call on his own personal physical health, which was recommended to him by doctors. So I thought, well done to Collingwood. They're showing loyalty to a player who put his body on the line numerous times, who now has to retire because he's sleeping, his headaches, his migraines. I'm all for what they did, and the AFL should allow that to not be in the cap, and the player should be fully paid for the service that he's done. He's now retired because of what he put his body through and his head. And we talk about how risky the game is. This is just showing the support that what these players go through.
Yeah, so I think that's conflating two issues. One, on the human side of things, absolutely, and Nathan Murphy's entitled to all of it, plus he'll get the concussion settlement through insurance. But Collingwood made that decision eyes wide open. It's a free hit. If the money's outside the cap, it's nothing.
Brayshaw. Same with Brayshaw.
Brayshaw was a 6-year contract. Melbourne knew.
They're aware. I think the AFL average wage has to sit in the gap. I don't think you should just get a clean wipe. You've made that decision. If it goes wrong, for 6 years, you absorb the AFL average wage for that player. And then I think it services all parties.
That's a very sensible suggestion. As a middle
that's
ground.
Way too it, sensible for you, King.
You look short, but... Why are you so shocked?
It needs to be prescribed. So this is overdue.
Pisses me off how shocked you are.
This is overdue.
Oh, boy.
As a policy, I think. There's enough of these instances that everybody should know for absolute clarity where it sits.
And if you sign them for 6 years, well, that's you run that risk. But you're not paying overs. I mean, if it's $1 million player, you're still just taking, what's the AFL average at the moment now, about 450 or something?
Yep. But you don't want the players to be punished either, do you?
No, they get their money.
They get their money.
No,
and
but
they get their insurance.
You don't want clubs to be reluctant to give contracts that players deserve because they're living in fear that they're going to be beholden to paying inside the cap.
They're only paying the AFL average. So it's an average AFL player. It's not a star factor cost.
I'm with Jared. I'm shocked too. It's a very sensible idea.
I know you would be.
It's an elegant solution.
But my thing is, it's when you play football, you know that you're going to have shoulders, knees, but you can push through. Like some blokes play with bone on bow. Yes, you're going to be sore when you finish. When it comes to medical recommended, you finish your career because of what you've put your body through. And in this case, he's obviously concussions has caused it. Same with Brayshaw. This is where I think it's outside, and the player should be outside the cap because any physical injury, you can push through that. Whether it's a broken arm, shoulders, bad shoulders, you can push through that and keep playing for as long as you want until the club want to get rid of you. This is a medically one where they've said, no, we're not, we can't let you continue to go through because of what's going to happen to you later in life, considering what we've seen players through the 80s, 90s have gone through.
Yeah, I just think there has to be clarity because if we use the Brayshaw case study, does Fremantle have a free hit at offering him an 8-year contract at $900,000, knowing that if it does go south, they're out of all of it?
Yeah.
I can't have that.
Yeah.
So yours is an elegant solution. It needs to be enshrined so that everybody knows.
Yeah, you just can't have clubs making these decisions with no cost.
I wanted to ask you, Sam, do you think Collingwood did it with a wink and a nod? Extended the contracts with a wink and a nod from the AFL. This is how it's going to land.
Yeah, and that's the easy conclusion to draw, but I don't think so. No, I think the clubs are completely in the dark. Now, they might be relatively confident they're going to get, as Kingy might suggest, either a full discount or a partial discount on this. But there was a chance, I think, for a time that Nathan Murphy's contract extension was longer than 1 year. So that points to Collingwood being in the dark, and perhaps only was the one because... speculating here because they weren't absolutely sure of what they were going to be beholden to in the aftermath.
But what are Collingwood getting out of it though? The only thing is they're doing this to look after their player. So you're sort of saying that a wink and a nod, sort of saying that if they get if he has to retire, we don't get anything back.
Yeah, but so that they know they're not $500,000 short in the 2025 cap.
But they didn't need to sign him at all. Well, he had a contract for this year. They didn't need to extend it at all.
The point is they did. So did they do it knowing they weren't going to be short-suited in 2025?
Yeah, of course they did, but they were looking after their player.
Yeah, but that's every the thing. Club would love to give their players an extra $500,000, but that's why we have a salary cap.
It's a bit different. That players haven't gone through This is a person who they were worried about his well-being and saying that they would have preferred for him to go through and be okay and play for another 10 years. This is what their wish was, that he could play for another 5, 6, 7 years. But what they were doing, they were showing the support for him because of what he put his body through playing for that football club.
The question is, would they have done it if the whole salary stayed in the cap?
And that's why we are long overdue for a policy that's what on this front, which is the point. So prescribe it and tell everybody so that we can actually deal with the facts.
Coming in the next couple of weeks, I think, Jared, on that front.
Super Saturday is ahead of us on Crunch Time. We'll delve next.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
But look, I think, you know, when you're playing against really good teams, it challenges all parts of your system. We've felt like we've had certainly large parts of our system together and operated really, really well. But, you know, when we come up against, GWS, then we've got to make sure that certainly defensively we're on, but we can't ignore the other parts of the game as well.
You know, we're scoring well. We've got a variety of scoring options, and that's, I think that makes us difficult to stop. Not impossible, but difficult. And so for our ability to spread the load in all lines, not just the forward line, is really important attribute that I think we have.
Adam Kingsley and Michael Voss, as we look towards today's games for the Barclays Smokehouse, ask for Grandmother Ham at your local deli. In the twilight, it's Carlton and the Giants, both are missing key personnel. This is a high-end encounter as we shake out who's who in the early portion of the season. David King and Luke Hodge on duties, and Hodge, a pretty keen eye towards this.
I think everyone's been so impressed with GWS and how they've been able to continue on their improvement from last year. They sort of jumped out of the blocks with a new coach. Unlucky not to get to a grand final last year, but the football that they've played has been exciting. It's been what he's promised us. And then Carlton. I think everyone had a keen eye on Carlton, the way they fought back. So this is sort of, you're sitting back going, a Carlton home game. Yes, they've been a little bit depleted with a few injuries, with a few hamstrings, but everything's shaping up to be a pretty good contest today.
You look at the Giants run into this game. Beat Collingwood, who haven't been the Collingwood, you know, we gave that win overs. Given what we've seen the last few weeks, beat North Melbourne, beat West Coast, beat the Suns, beat St Kilda by a point, fell in against St Kilda. I think we need to see what the Giants are today. Look, are they the absolute real deal? Are they out that far in front? Look, everyone talks about them like they've beaten all the top eight. Haven't really done it yet. So I'm excited to see them today. Without Sam Taylor, I think it's another challenge that they've gone to war against Carlton without Sam before and got the chocolates. But I want to see whether, you know, is Buckley the man? Can he go and do that job on Curnow? And what happens then? Does Himmelberg assume fullback? Or do you then say to Connor Iden, hey, let's find out about Connor Iden. Great against the third tall forwards. Can you step up into the next weight range and get the job done? Do they give him Curnow to try and absolutely find out? Maybe it offers them another option going forward from here. Does Taylor actually have to play on the best the opposition's got? Or can he do what Jeremy McGovern does and mix and match and just be the interceptor and get better again? You know, they're the sort of answers I think we'll find today. And from a Carlton point of view, when are you going to get your clearance game back? But when are you going to get that violent, you know, ballistic, that anger to get from inside to out? I haven't seen Patrick Cripps rip a midfield game apart for a little while. I wonder whether is it still in them? I know they're missing some players and all that sort of stuff, but they're missing the guys that have been important for them over the last few weeks because they're winning games on ball movement. So those couple of halfbackers not there now, McGovern and Saad, it just challenges the others to do a bit more. So I think they need some clearance help today. They need the fabric of Carlton is to be so tough the others can't breathe.
They're living the scourge of soft tissue at the moment, Sam.
There's a lot of them. Five hamstrings on a long injury list, Jared. And they happen, of course, don't they? So McGovern and Saad just unlucky last week. But it's the ones that are done at training that I think if you did a straw poll of the Carlton supporter base would be the annual source of frustration for a club that this happens, seems to happen year upon year. So Adam Chera does a hamstring at training. Jack Martin's coming back from a knee, does a hamstring at training. Jesse Martin's coming back from a toe, does a hamstring at training. Caleb Marchbank was out with concussion. Next thing you hear, he's got a back issue at training. So what is happening at training at the Carlton Football Club at the moment? Is this a bring your mouth guards philosophy every week down there, Jared? This is supposed to be the safe haven, the rehab corner, the place where you go and prepare, not when you double your injury list.
I think there'd be some quiet questions being asked rather firmly, don't you?
It might be a little, come in and have a chat for a sec.
Yeah.
That's no good. Gee whiz, I didn't realise it was...
And when the question got put to Michael Voss yesterday in regards to will you review this, it's the easy thing for a coach, and you don't expect him to say anything in the heat of the moment, but it is, oh, we review everything. So we're reviewing, we're always reviewing everything. But I think this is something that's not new. I think, Carlton, you, without having the data in front of me, if you were to go back the last few years and look at games lost due to injury, I'd be shocked if they weren't in the top handful every year.
Would this have a lot to do with, obviously, a shorter pre-season for teams? They didn't get as much match play in. But then as soon as you have a little hiccup at the start of the season, then players trying to do a little bit extra to get back, this is where you find it. Round 4, 5 and 6, where players have had a bit of a hiccup, but then the match intensity starts up and then you're probably not recovering as well as what you could be, and then you're trying to do that little bit more where, unfortunately, you can have a few hiccups at training.
You can't afford to be losing good players at training. That's just a no-no. And the competition's so tight. As it is, without committing some own goals. Mm.
But that's what they try and do. That's what they try and do these days, though. They want you to hit match-like speed, match-like intensity before they put you out in the field. Because if you're going to break down, you prefer to do it at training so they're not one short on game day.
And that's why Sam Walsh is probably able to come in and have the outrageously good game he was straight off the bat with no other warm-up. So that's it. That's the tightrope, isn't it, Jared, that they're all walking at the moment.
Collingwood and Port Adelaide. So the Pies have had the bye. It's a little while since we've seen them. There are a few form lines, actually, that look a bit suspect, and a narrow win over Hawthorn looks a bit suspect. Is this the day where we start to see Collingwood emerge into their proper premiership defence? That's sort of what sits over it for me.
Yeah, I don't know where Hodgie sits, but it's hard not to fall in love with what Port Adelaide are doing. Yeah, their midfield are dynamic. They're probably the show at the moment, aren't they? They're the biggest attraction in the AFL, this midfield. Rosie Butters, Horn Francis, or Drew, whichever one you want to have as the third wheel. I think they're playing with such a dynamic brand that it's we're in for the ride. They're a serious challenger this year, and Collingwood get them when they're hot. Well, no Charlie Dixon there today helps, but gee whiz, the ball movement of Collingwood's worried me this year. It hasn't been what it was last year, and back in the last year it dropped off a little bit as well. So I just wonder whether they've. They played safe. They changed their mode last time we saw them a couple of weeks ago. They went a bit more down the line, a bit less corridor handball. It wasn't absolute to come through the corridor. So I wonder if they're undergoing a bit of an evolution. So I look forward to seeing today what that looks like.
It's actually Port Adelaide. This is only the second time they've travelled. They've played 4 of the 5 games actually at Adelaide Oval. So to try and come across and dismantle Collingwood, I reckon they've definitely got the ability to do it. Teams with a bit of speed can try and get Collingwood out the back. We know how Collingwood want to surge through the middle together, but Port Adelaide, Rosie, Butters, Horn Francis and the likes with their leg speed can cause a few issues for the Collingwood midfielders, considering they are very one-paced. And then with throwing Dacos across the half-back line to rejuvenate the ball movement from there as well.
Who do you tag? Do you tag Butters or do you tag Rosie?
I reckon they'll start head-to-head. I reckon they'll start backing them because they've got an experienced midfield. It's just that the leg speed, who are they going to tag them with? That's the only concern because a lot of those blokes are ball hunters. Are they going to go through shift. And
I think there's a shift take in one the of game them happening right before our eyes. I think the wing...
Agree.
Teams have been using both wingers, you know, one behind the ball, one forward of the ball. I think they're now going to one winger working behind the ball and the other winger tagging at stoppages. So you pick the Petrarca type. He's not going to beat us. So you lock in on him, and if he drifts forward, you go with him. The Heaney discussion we had the other night on 360, you just can't let them roam around and do their own thing because they're too good and they're ruining games. So I think that they'll pick a player to do that today, Hodgie. I don't think they'll let Rosie get forward like he's been getting the last few weeks and at least minimise the damage of one of those guys.
Yeah, I'm looking at would a crisp be someone who you'd look to try and just nullify? Because as you said, if you let those three blokes just run right, you saw what happened to Essendon a couple of weeks ago on the Friday night when Horn Francis and Rosie tore them apart. But sort of looking through the middle, there's not many others who are going to go and do a run with throughout the midfield. Collingwood won their premiership by playing offensive, hard running, exciting ball movement. They didn't win it by shutting down opponents, but sometimes when you come up against a team with the big names at Port do, you might have to have a little bit of a defensive mindset just to try and shut down one of their strengths.
Yeah, well, I think when you're playing your brand of footy and it's in good order, you don't worry about anything. You don't worry about what the opposition are doing. You're saying we're wrong. They're not there at the moment, Collingwood. I don't think they can run the risk of going head-to-head.
Rostered day off for Charlie Dixon, Sammy?
Yeah, this was always part of the plan, and Ken Hinckley said even before the season started, when they were in their planning phase, this would be the one he was going to miss. It's just compounded, isn't it? Because they never would have envisaged that Jeremy Finlayson was going to be suspended. So a new look forward. Looking forward to seeing a man who's had a lot of bad luck recommitted to the footy club, hopefully can get ahead of steam up. Mitch Georgiades out here as well, because Port Adelaide have been so excited about him for so long. Hopefully can get some momentum into the season and a real crack at it today.
The right call to map out a plan to get Charlie to the end.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. And I was a bit stiff. A couple of weeks ago, I was going to present on first crack the guys that need a break. Mitch McGovern's never played a full year of footy, and he played the five games. I thought it might be time for him to have a spell. Does a hamstring that weekend, so I can't have the discussion now.
You can't spell him Dixon, after 5 weeks, can you?
Well, history says he doesn't play. He breaks down after 5 weeks. Surely you learn from the past. You don't just saddle up and think you're getting a different result at 30 years of age.
Come down to professionalism as well?
Well, I don't care what it comes down to. I want him healthy full season long. He hasn't played a full year in his 12 years at the level. Why saddle up that again?
But then Charlie bobs up and wins them the game last week. So the debate would have to have been, oh, geez. Well, you know, even if he has and he looks his age for three quarters, he can win us the game in the last.
But fresh Charlie is a different Charlie. Mm.
Oh, no, I'm all support for Charlie having a rest. I thought you meant McGovern. I thought
I would have rested McGovern. I wouldn't have run the risk of having him get injured again. I think Jeremy's the same. You just can't keep throwing him out there. I know we want him. They don't want to take him off the field because they're so important. But there's a handful of guys, and George Wardlaw was one. He's the same. He's got a history of hamstring problems. If you just keep putting him out there, it will happen.
It's where Geelong have been so good. So Tom Hawkins misses last week, comes in to play Brisbane. I'm not sure if Chris Scott he maps it out beforehand, like Dwayne Russell's tipping. He does it all before round one. I'm not sure that's Chris's go, but it's horses for courses. And I'm interested to see if Jeremy Cameron, I'm sure, will get a rest in the near future as well, perhaps.
Well, that's the game tonight, isn't it? Up at the Gabba, the Brisbane Lions and Geelong.
So, Dixon, just to not labour the point, but if you track his first three games of the season and his first three games back from injury, there where all his goals are. Mm. After that, he drops off because of the volume of contests this guy's in. He drops off and then he gets injured. So, if you don't rest them, you're almost going to lose them through injury. Yep. I think it's great man management.
Hodgie, Lions and Cats, and you're part of the woods tonight.
I've been impressed by Geelong and their high half forwards. The smaller mids, pardon me, you normally talk about the Dangerfields and these guys, but it's been the Myers, the closest, these guys that can work high up the ground, have a real impact, and then work back hard and set up your Camerons and Hawkins and the like. So the selfless role that those guys play, and they don't get much attention in the media. It's normally their big names, but I think it's a big chance for the Lions. They've sort of, the last couple of weeks, have played better football. Melbourne, though, really good. They really broke down Melbourne's game style. They really hunted them. And I think for the Lions to sort of show the mindset of where they've been and where they're going is they need to have the same mindset against Geelong. They need to. I hope the coaches have broken down where Geelong have been really strong. They're high half forwards, as I just spoke about, but they need to have that same mindset as to hunt the Cats. Normally, when teams have come up to the Gabba, they're worried about coming up against a team that you just can't beat at the Gabba. Teams have proven it this year that they're gettable. If you come in and hunt the Lions, they're gettable up there. So it's going to be a big battle. And tell you what, if the Lions lose this one to a roaring Cats, it's going to be pretty tough for them. What would they be? 2-4. So big issues for them in that case.
I just want to see if Cam Rayner can do it again. Yeah, that was exceptional what he did against the D. So can he now just stamp that role as his own? The Isaac Heaney, Christian Petrarca role, it's such a weapon, such an asset. So if he can, it'll be a bonus for them. Do they have Charlie Cameron 40 from goal or out of the goal square at the Gabba? His hunting ground's been the goal square up there. But they've just got so much out of it last week. They looked a different team. So it didn't have to be Lachie Neale or bust last week.
Yep.
He had some support. So I want to see if Brisbane can get themselves going. All their indicators are really strong. I heard Daniel Horne talk during the week with Jared and Cornsey, and he just said he'd be staggered if they didn't make a prelim, if they can hold this profile. That they will be playing in the second last week if they can maintain what they're doing. That's a pretty good wrap.
Zach Bailey was an untimely injury for them, wasn't it?
Four to six weeks. 4 to 6 weeks, yeah. This one snuck up on us, didn't it? And what an energiser player. I think his brother's actually having a run around their VFL team. Oggy might know the answer to that as well. So another sibling coming through, perhaps. But, yeah, he's going to be out of the team. And this is probably as well, it was referenced during the tribunal hearing as well, being so significant for Charlie Cameron in terms of his availability. But Geelong have found another one. Just having a look, Ollie Dempsey. I had to remind myself, a rookie draft pick. Just can't believe how they keep fighting him down there at the Cats.
Beat the lunch lockout with Grandmother Ham.
It's unfair. Go to some sort of rebuild. Can you give the rest of us a chance?
A glimpse at what's happening on Super Saturday. We've got a bit to come next. Oh, there were casualties in SEN Survivor early. We've got a little wild card to hand out to keep Kingy afloat.
I've lasted a week.
2 years in a row.
If you're headed to Marvel for the Carlton game later today, make sure to elevate your dining experience before, during or after the game at the two new restaurant bars located at Gate 3, Amphora and Friends of Fire, two beautiful venues.
You're listening to Crunch Time, Azito. Over 100 tools for your home and garden. Do it yourself. Do it with Azito. Do you. After a new Ranger or F-150, head over to Freeway Ford Cranbourne and test drive one today.
Crunch time. As we look towards Super Saturday, we'll be with Collingwood and Port Adelaide soon enough. Luke Hodge, our chance to say congratulations to you, inducted into the Hawthorn Hall of Fame on Wednesday night. Was it a good night?
It was. Thanks, guys. No, it was a good night. Sammy Almotello. And myself, and then Alan Jeans got put up into legendary status. So it was good to get back, see a few of the boys you haven't seen for a while, and thought we were a bit younger, maybe went out for a little bit longer than what we probably should have. We were a little bit dusty on the Thursday, but no, it was good to catch up with a few former teammates and have a few beers with them.
Quality of speeches? So evidently the elevation for Alan Jeans was pretty great.
Yeah, I think when you get blokes, Derm, Platts, Jace Dunstall up on stage to talk about Alan Jeans and what he did and what he meant for them. You know that the quality, and I think everyone was sitting on the edge of their seats for some of the stories that the boys were telling with him. You can see why he was put up into a legendary status considering those blokes and what they think and admire him.
And from an overall perspective of the Australian Football Hall of Fame, Jason Dunstall reaches legendary status come mid-June.
And I love the fact that we know now. I think this is one of the unintended consequences of, because he's such a presence in the media and he didn't want to lie to everyone and have to hold that information in for 2 months. But it's been an elongated celebration. Yeah. I think it's terrific. He's handled it really well. The AFL have handled it well. I think this is the new way forward, Jared. If the person's around and it's not posthumous, then I think it's a great idea to announce it well in advance.
And the best part was at our Hall of Fame was we know that Jace doesn't like any attention. So every person who got up there and spoke actually thanked Jace and said, well done and congratulations. So he went there trying to celebrate other people and everyone celebrated Jace for what he'd done for the Hawthorn Football Club, but also for the AFL. It was a great achievement by him.
Did you hear Dermot's line?
Oh, yeah.
So good.
That's great.
Great achievement, given you weren't even the best forward in our line. Second best forward in Hawthorn.
It's a good effort, considering he's the second best forward. That's so good.
That's up there with the War Brothers sledge. You're not even the best war in your family. He kicked double-figure bags 16 times. When you go back through the resume of some of these guys, it's absolutely frightening what he was able to produce.
So I was having a look. He's hard to get to talk about himself, or it's impossible to get James to talk about himself. And I said, so the gap between his 600th goal and his 750th goal is about 20 games.
Yes. 6 months.
It's ridiculous. He kicked 145 goals 1 year. And you go, mate, what was it like? I asked him what it was like. He said, I kicked like three bags. He kicked two bags of 12 and a 17.
He kicked a 17 against Richmond at Waverley.
In the 1 year.
17.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? So 40 goals in three games.
But it's not only what he did on the footy field. Like, he was interim CEO. My second or third year when the club needed him. And then he went onto the board. So, yes, he's been an amazing person on the footy field, but he's helped Hawthorn so much off it as well.
SEN Survivor for Flight Centre. Book with your very own travel expert in store today. So, Hodgie, you took the safe routes and nailed Geelong last week. So, no points for Valour, but you survive, and that's the actual game. Sam Edmund was on good terms with himself when the Giants were miles in front and had to survive the nail-biting comeback of the Saints. Phil Davis bowed out straight away. That's a rich tradition.
Yep.
Out first time around, like David King did when Richmond beat Sydney. So, Kingy, we're going to give you the wild card, the seller's wild card. You've got Mark McClure's choice.
Doesn't matter.
It comes with a caveat. You have to use it boldly.
Boldly. We'll get the job done today, the Blues. Too good down here. We'll get them done. Doesn't matter.
That's a good impersonation.
What's the matter? Doesn't matter. And if it doesn't work out, we'll sack Vossie, we'll move on. It doesn't matter.
Carlton. Hodgie, where do you want to go?
I'm going to head over to Perth. And I'm not going to be the courageous one. I'm going to stick and try and go for another win. And I'm going to go Fremantle.
Lovely, lovely. Sammy.
Jared, you said I was on good terms with myself, so I'm going to play into that. I think I'm seeing them so well that I'm going to go with what's about to unfold out here. Now, I'm all aboard the teal triumvirate. That's Butters, Rosie, Horn Francis, and I reckon they're going to rip Collingwood apart today. So I'm going Port Adelaide as my certainty.
Sammy, rule number one, you never pick an away team. Rule number one. Getting ahead of myself, Hodgie. Never pick an away team.
I like it.
All right, we'll see you on the benches next week.
Who did you go, Jared?
Oh, I've got the sellers if I don't get up.
Oh, I like this thing in the fifth at Ascot. Simon Miller trains it. That's where I go.
Oh, not bad. He was ready for it.
The Flight Centre, the travel experts.
He was ready for that.
Survivor. That'll get back.
This is Super Saturday, thanks to Supergroups. Biggest Saturday of the AFL season so far. The MCG about to start. Collingwood and Port Adelaide, we're about to focus in here. Kane Corns will be here for the broadcast. Then across we go to Marvel, where Kingy and Sam are heading to watch the Blues and the Giants and the mouth-watering doubleheader to finish it off. The Lions hosting the Cats at the Gabba. And on the other coast, the 58th Derby between the Eagles and the Dockers. From 1 ton to 8 ton, Supergroups are the masters of Kubota excavators. Luke Hodge, terrific. Great to have you with us.
Thank you, guys.
David King, thanks for being here.
Hey, boys.
Sam Edmund, good stuff.
Great fun, guys.
All right, let's settle in to this Super Saturday.